The Nets fire their coach, and we got Kevin Ollie and Eitan Rosenberg here with Rosenballs. All right. So, look, the Nets, low key, and it's not low key anymore. It's quite high key. Are, you know, a fork in the road, whatever you want to call it. They're an NBA purgatory. Okay, like you don't want to be a consistent 8-12 seed, and that's exactly what they are. And look, I get what their ambitions were, and I probably would have done the same thing, right? They had a team set up for Ben Simmons to make a comeback. There was a lot of people that were quietly bullish on him this year, and he had spacers around him, and it was set up for him. It really was. And look, I'm a believer, not necessarily Simmons itself, but that concept, meaning I believe players are who they are, and they're a product of their situation. And if you saw Simmons, you saw what he played. The talent was there. And it wasn't this, like, you know, it was unclear what the reason was, that he wasn't performing, per se, there. But in the beginning, it was like, okay, we'll try him at power forward. It doesn't really work. Oh, he needs to be a point guard. Okay, great. This was supposed to be the year of Simmons, you know, for the Nets. And I think they gave it a good shot. And he went down again for an injury. And, like, there's a question that's just popping up now is, like, and this is, you know, is it medical? Is it mental? It's unclear to determine how consistent Simmons is going to be and to really rely on this guy. So the Nets now have a decision to make, which is, like, look, do you just hang on to this albatross contract? And, look, he's only got a couple years left. So the years become less scary and less scary, and or do you have your cake you need it to, right? You can still see, hey, if he does anything, great, but we need to have another course of action, right? And I think that's the case right now with the Nets. And to me, now getting Kevin Ollie in, this team doesn't have anything going. They lack identity, and there's a larger macro issue with, you know, they've tried implanting stars now. This is the, I feel like, the third go-around, right? Well, the first go-around was Deron Williams, and then you know, combining Deron Williams and Joe Johnson. The second go-around was Pierce and Garnett implanting there. And then the third go-around was the whole Kyrie KD and then Harden situation. And the lesson to me is, like, look, when you're building a franchise in a community, which, look, this is kind of like an expansion team. They're new to a city. You have to have that city clamor around certain talent. Not like ingrown. If that talent just comes in for a couple years and leaves, you know, there's not a lot of connectivity or connection, rather, to the talent. You need someone that everyone, you know, talks about and really reps for that area, right? And Mikal Bridges isn't that guy. And look, it's hard to get that guy. Totally get it. And look, part of it is, like, Brooklyn is kind of like, it's in New York, right? It's kind of like LA, where you could be a free agency destination, but they've gone that route. There's obviously people that want to play in the city and all that, but I feel like you got to get your ducks in the row first, and that starts with homegrown talent. And the last time the Nets did that, now granted, I don't think it was seen as much because it was around the bubble period, I believe, was when they traded Thad Young for Caris LeVert. And LeVert, you know, ended up building something. They got Russell, who was young at the time. He made an all-star team. And then Kenny Atkinson. And that team started getting an identity and I think could have built somewhat of a communal fan base. And they have to go back to that approach. They have to rebuild this thing. And I wouldn't say from the studs per se, because they have the Simmons thing lingering. But they have to build it to an extent. And I think they're at a pivotal moment right now where the NBA goes through value cycles. Okay. Certain types of talents get extremely overrated. Certain types of talents get underrated. And teams that are smart can see that and take advantage, right? So, you know, for example, centers have paved their way out of the league, and low-post centers are really underrated, right? Now centers are gone, right? But at the same time, like, they're not so bad. Some of the ones that can space are actually quite good. Like, Nikola Vucevic is a good example. He's become so overrated that now he's underrated a little bit. And, like, I think a team could get him out of value if Chicago was willing to move him. And you have a lot of guys like that. Andre Drummond's making a comeback now. And he became so overrated, he's underrated. And you have to look at the guys that are so overrated, they're underrated. John Collins, so overrated that he's underrated. And, like, people overrate, like, oh, you totally don't need that. He's a low post talent. He can't shoot the three well enough. The guy's still got talent. Julius Randle, great example. Zach Randolph, great example, right? Like, it was a situation. So, right now, the thing that's the most overrated in the NBA, and it's not so overrated, it's underrated. It's still overrated, is two-way wings. Three and D wings, wings with any three and D potential. And here's what I would say. They're good. They're necessary. They're needed. Okay? But the amount that people are paying to acquire them seems a bit substantial. It really does. Right? The Bulls are requesting two firsts for Alex Caruso. I love Caruso. He's 30. Okay? The package that and he's worth it, it looks like. Masai was trying to get for OG. Right? And these guys are worth it, but there's you have to pay a premium to get them. Okay? These types of talents. And my argument is they're and maybe they're rating accordingly, but you still get a lot of value for them. But I compare them to guys, the underrated part of that is guys who are actually average shooters. Maybe they don't shoot 40%, they shoot 35%, and are better defensively. Minnesota's got a bunch of them. So you look at like Jaden McDaniels, right? Not a 40% shooter, 35, 36, just as good, if not better, defensively. The Dallas Mavericks, Derrick Jones Jr., he hit a corner three. Not the best baser, but again, his shooting's not superb, but his defense is immaculate. And right now, defense is still very underrated because people don't know. It's still subjective, right? But if you have defense with great shooting, then all of a sudden your value goes crazy. But then people don't value enough if it's defense with okay shooting. The defense with okay shooting is actually where the deal is at. That's where the value is at. So like Herb Jones, whose value is actually fluctuated, used to be great. Now it's like teetering. It's because his shooting percentages went down. He's still amazing defensively. Jonathan Isaac's another good one, right? He's great. He's the best defensive player of the league, okay? But because he's an average shooter, his value is not as high, right? And, like, look, shooting's important. I get it. But give me the guy who shoots a couple percentage points less and, by the way, takes the right shots for, you know, 20 cents on the dollar. I bring that up because I go back to the Brooklyn Nets here. And the move to me, and it's quite obvious, has to be moving Mikal Bridges. The value is too great. Now, his value is not going to fluctuate between now and the trade and draft night. So Brooklyn did the right move hanging on to him. But if you look at the teams and you hear some of the rumors of what they were getting, it's crazy. Sometimes four or five first-rounders. And there's a lot of options that they can do. But if I'm them, I look for a team that has a ton of volume of talent, like a quantity issue, not a quality issue. And to me, New Orleans is a good example, and Houston's a good example. Houston makes the most sense because you get all your picks back, potentially. And if they could just cut their losses on this, like, James Harden trade that they did a couple years ago and get all their picks back from Houston and get one of their youth, that's just a move, and we'll get to details of what that looks like right after the break. All right, so what are the specific moves that Brooklyn needs to do? We talk about Houston, talk about New Orleans. If you start throwing Mikal Bridges on the block, I mean, the offers are going to be there, the four, five first-round picks. And the reason it's all going to be about incentives and longevity. This is the biggest thing in sports negotiating, in my opinion. It's figuring out what franchises have what incentives and what longevity. And here's what I mean, right? If you have a team that has a GM or an ownership that's kind of on the fence or looks like, hey, this might be their last run, you want to take advantage if you're a team with longevity. So a good example, this is random, but it's like 15 years ago, I want to say, the Washington Wizards had an upcoming top pick in the draft, and their owner, A. Polin, was old, right? And he said something to Tommy Shepard, who was the assistant GM at the time. He wanted to leave with a bang, right? He wanted to leave the world with a bang. He wanted to make a run. Now, as you know, like, it doesn't happen like that. You can't just, like, win the title. But Shepard's kind of under the gun there as the GM. He knows he's got to satisfy his owner, and he needs to make somewhat of a win-now move. And what does he do? If you recall, he trades – And I'm trying to remember who it was to, because I know who they got back, and I'll mention him in a second. But they traded like a top six pick, I want to say, for Mike Miller. Was it the Mike Miller or Kevin Martin? I think it was Mike Miller, right? And I was riveting. I'm gonna research it. I can't find it now. As I'm driving, but Mike Miller gets traded to Washington, and it's because like a team I want to say was probably Memphis that he was on, and I don't even know what the pick who the pick ended up being, but Memphis takes advantage of that. I mean, that's great value for him, right? You have a Golden State team that takes advantage of Charlotte, similar circumstances, and they trade Richardson there because they know Jordan's the owner, and they got Larry Brown, those expectations to make the playoffs. So like incentives matter, and it hamstrings franchises and GMs when there's basically the way I would say it is short versus long term. And right now Brooklyn, the reason why they might not move Mikal is because of the Sean Marks thing. Sean Marks has got a year left in his contract, and the question that they have to ask, and that's not nothing against Sean Marks. Sean Marks actually is quite a good talent evaluator from what. We've seen in his drafting and some of the ideas that he has. I don't know how much is him versus ownership and who else is controlling things. But you have to ask, what is there a longevity there, right? And yeah, so Randy Foy and Mike Miller went as a Minnesota deal. It was David Kahn. Number five pick. Right? So they sent the fifth pick. And actually, this was a crazy deal in retrospect. Do you realize? I just realized something. Well, that I just realized it. This is the 09 draft, guys. This is the Steph Curry draft. The Wizards had the fifth pick in the Steph Curry draft. Yeah, the same draft with Rubio, whoever. Even if it was Rubio, they traded the fifth pick because their owner was, about to pass away and want to leave with a bang to Minnesota. And David Kahn's not even a good GM. But he just started. He had longevity. The guy got two picks. I grant that. I get it. Like, we all talked about a Kahn messed it up. He got Flynn and Rubio. Okay, I get it. Fine. But my point is, the Wizards had the fifth pick in a draft that, within consideration, was top 10 player of all time. And forget even that him for a second. You get Ricky Rubio, who's had a long career in the league. At night, like Rubio, like to me, that's a bit wild. Right? That's wild. That tells you the craziness of longevity, how it plays out. So, to me, the one thing that's hurting the Nets right now is going to be what the contract situation is, Sean Marks and the marching charge, right? And I think the Nets, to me, have a bigger thing where it's the clean your room mentality, where like I think as you're a franchise, you're Brooklyn, you're going to get you're in a big market. The media is going to showcase you if you're decent. They need to focus on getting more local support and building a local framework. And they had their shot, and they're kind of blowing it because their shot was when the Knicks were bad. Okay? But now with the Knicks being good, they're going to be the talk of the town. And if you're a up-and-coming New York fan in Brooklyn, you're going to be interested in the Knicks versus the Nets, 100%. So I don't know. There's not a lot that they can save there, but I mean, homegrown works the most, and you hope just to build some kind of core fan base that way, right? So that's my first thought. That's crazy with the Mike Miller trade. No one talks about the Wizards, by the way. Like they could have had Steph Curry. It's not mentioned that much for Randy Foy and Mike Miller. My God, that's awful. And if you're the Nets, you got to get your picks back from Houston. And like, look, I personally would get started on it. I would have gotten started on the rebuild. Like, I probably would have negotiated something with Houston. I'd rather get picks now worth more than picks later. And the problem is, like, if they had done a Mikal Bridges move now, you get Ollie, you kind of tank down the stretch, you get a top five pick. I get it's not the best draft. I get it. But then it's 1 year earlier that your fan base is figuring out who they are. You're getting someone in that could still make an impact. Even if you get Alexander Sarr, you know, the kid out of the point guard at USC, right? You could get something. You could trade, you know, whatever, right? But right now, like, it's not not the best bet for them. Now, if I'm Brooklyn, I get my picks back and I go to Houston and I say, look, Houston's got a ton of youth, right? And I'm not even going for the main guys. I let them, you got Smith Jr. I'm not going through pick fallacies we talked about, right? But look, they have Cam Whitmore, they got Thompson, and they got Terry Eason, okay? I feel like I can get some of those three. I want to give a shot to Ty Washington. Fine. I'm not going to go crazy over him. But amongst those three, my proposal to Houston, and I think Houston does it. You're going to say, it's too much. They do it. If they were offering four their picks back, I think they do this. And to me, the move is this. It's Bridges, okay, for two of Eason, Whitmore, and Thompson. Give me two of them. Actually, and I would try to push for Thompson, obviously. I would be like, actually, I would say give me Thompson and one of Eason and Whitmore. But I'd actually go for Thompson and Whitmore. I think Thompson Whitmore was supposed to be a top 10 pick in a situation you can be good. And that's the move. And then I see what Cam Thompson does. I see what Whit does. And I'll take it from there. That's what I do if I'm Brooklyn. Rebuild, baby.